Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Well, hello and good evening, White Sox fans. Today, believe it or not, we are pretty much approaching the deadline here, less than 24 hours away. But today is Wednesday, July 30th. Like I said, we are less than 24 hours away from the trade deadline. And nothing huge of note as yet for the White Sox. Austin Slater was traded to the Yankees for the Yankees' number 18 overall prospect. Nothing crazy there. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight. Lots to talk about. But before we get into, let me just say this. I haven't even introduced you yet. The guy that's going to be talking with me tonight, as you all are aware and has been with me all season this year, is Jacob Thome. How you doing, Jacob?
We're hanging in there. Nothing to complain about.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We've been watching some pretty good White Sox baseball here. So, yeah, absolutely nothing to complain about. I have some complaints outside of what we've been watching on television here, but we'll get into that. I've got so much to say tonight. And a lot of it has to do with what I'm seeing on the socials, but I digress. I am going to start the show a little bit, and you might have to stop me a couple of times tonight because I have some rants that I might go on. But like I said, we'll get into those things. But before we get into White Sox baseball, I wanted to just throw it out there that my pseudo niece, very good friends of mine, their young 14-year-old daughter, is playing in I want to make sure I get this right, or at least close to right. It is the Junior Little League or Junior Softball Little League World Series in Kirkland, Washington right now. Dude, 14U, it's basically the equivalent of the Boys Little League World Series. They are representing the Central team out of Evergreen Park. Mackenzie Norbutt, I call her my niece because she's been calling me Uncle Danny since as long as she could talk. Her older brother is a St. Rita kid. Go Rita. Go Mustangs. I am a Rita guy. But he's also a hell of an athlete. But right now, this is her time, man. She's really shining out there. Local, Southside-ish, Evergreen Park Little League team, girls softball team is rolling. They are the only team in pool play so far. Four games of pool play that is undefeated. They have won most of their games pretty handily with, I think the only game that was close was the other day against Milan, Italy. They won by one run. Today they beat the pants off the team from Puerto Rico with a 12-5 win, but they have been scoring anywhere from like 12 to 16 runs a game and just dominating. If you guys are friends of mine on Facebook, you can see I've posted some of the highlights from that. But I just wanted to say how proud I am of these girls and, my niece Mackenzie. She literally crushed a bomb yesterday to start the scoring off in that game. Three-run homer. I mean, it was well out of the park, over the berm behind the left field fence. So, yeah, just fun. Exciting stuff to watch, proud to have watched her grow up and watched her play ball throughout the years. Just really amazing young lady, and the group of girls she's playing with are awesome too. So I wanted to shout that out. If you guys are interested in checking that out, all the games are being televised on ESPN+. So you know, just something to check out. I'll be posting some highlights later on as well too. So just wanted to give the girls a shout out. We're all pulling for you. They're going to begin the elimination play here, I believe, tomorrow or the day after. So top eight teams from all the rounds make it. They were, like I said, they were the only undefeated team in our round play. So, pool play. So looking forward to seeing that. I think if they win out three more games, that's it. It's over. They're the champs, and they will be immortalized in Little League history. So pretty cool stuff going on there, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, really, really cool. So what's up, Trey? Good to see you in the chat. Like I said, man, we've got a lot to talk about with less than 24 hours of the deadline. But before we get into the deadline talk, I figured we could kind of talk a little bit about this White Sox team and the offensive breakout that they've had since the All-Star break, just a little bit. And then, we can get into some of the more formal topics as the show goes on. But White Sox, by the way, have just won their third out of four series since the All-Star break. The only series they lost, unfortunately, was to the Northsiders. But even during that series, they pretty much held their own their whole time and had some pretty big offensive outbursts as well. So what do you think, man? What are you thinking about this White Sox club here since the All-Star break? I mean, I know we've been talking about it. This will be probably the third show now that we've been talking since the break about what's been going on. But, I mean, this is just fantastic stuff, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane, right? I mean, you're talking about a team who was horrible in the first half. They're the second-worst team in baseball, and all of a sudden they're 10-3 since the break. And, I mean, they're not winning lightly, and they're not beating, like, weak teams either. Like, the Pirates, sure, they're a bad team, but, like, they've taken now 2-3 from the Phillies. Should have taken 2-3 from the Cubs. I mean, you can make that argument that they should have won that last game. That's two division leaders in the NL.
Thing was kind of weird, but you know,
right? And then you add in a Rays team who is currently up on the Yankees right now. They're in the chase. They're in the middle of the NL, or sorry, the AL East. I mean, this team's starting to figure some things out, especially offensively. I mean, and it's really been cool to see the young guys, right? I mean, it's cool to see Talkman, but what you're really looking for is, Montgomery's now hitting a ton of bombs. Vargas homer today. Teal homer today. Carroll homer today. I mean, everybody's homering and playing really good baseball. And it's been a revolution on the South Side, and it's been a really fun last 2 weeks to watch.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. I made a tweet earlier about, there's a lot of folks. If you pay attention to the socials at all, and I have a difficult time getting involved. I do this every few months where I'm like, all right, I'm gonna force myself to post a little bit more and kind of put some thoughts out there. But man, I struggle with it because the socials, no matter what one you're on, the Twitter people will say Facebook's a toilet. The Facebook people will say Twitter's a toilet. I say they're both toilets. I say most of them are toilets. Because there's a lot of factless thoughts put out there. Things are done purely by emotion, and people get to saying things that are just ridiculous. I mean, it's very difficult for me sometimes to bite my tongue, but I want to be the bigger man because really what I want to do is I just want to go out there and start calling people idiots and fucktards and retards and whatever else. And I know you're not supposed to use those words. And this is a family show. Usually I don't do a lot of cussing, but whew, and I'm sorry. I apologize for that for anybody who's listening. I just have a tough time with that. Like I'm not the keyboard warrior type per se. But at the same time, I'm not one to usually pull punches and tell you sound stupid, but I have to when I get on the socials, and especially when I want to represent the brand Future Sox in a at least halfway decent fashion. So, good evening, Toss. How are you, Ian? Am I back? I don't know. He's telling me that I'm frozen in time here on the chat, but I don't know if what's
you're
going
back
on
my screen. You're moving around. I could see on my screen. So I think
did I glitch out for a minute there?
You were frozen for the first solid 2 minutes, but then I went to go check, and you started moving. So,
oh, did you hear any of what I was saying?
Yes, like, audio was great. You just weren't just moving.
Potatoed on the screen. Okay, cool. All right, so yeah, I mean, and I apologize again for my my foul language. I usually, like I said, try to keep it clean, but I mean, it's difficult to hear and see what a lot of people are saying out there, but I did post earlier today that we've been talking about it. You and I and so many others have been talking about how we've been saying the White Sox are good, bad for months now, right? Like, they've just been way more interesting of a watch, even when they're losing games. You know, we saw just better efforts out of most of the guys. We saw more heart, more effort in general across the board, guys hustling, guys seemingly wanting to do all the right things, and they were losing some close games. And now, I mean, games seem to just get out of hand. Like, the offensive has exploded. And I tweeted, like, it feels like they're going from good bad to, or fun bad to kind of almost fun good, at least for the last couple weeks. And I don't expect them to continue to do what they've been doing for the rest of the season, but I do expect some semblance of this to kind of continue the rest of the season, because now they've got this taste of what it feels like to gel, win games, you know, have just something to play towards, you know, even if it's not a postseason berth. It's you know, playing for the fan base to recognize, you know, playing for the rest of baseball to recognize this is not a bad ball club. I heard it said when they were in Pittsburgh that a lot of teams have kind of said to them, you know, after series are over in the bowels of some of these clubhouses and stadiums, that, hey, you know, you guys are actually better ball club than we thought. And I think maybe that's some of the fuel for the fires there. But, you know, it's just awesome to see. It's been a lot easier to watch. And it's a lot of it has to do with the youth movement on this club. Chase Mydroth has been doing some things, but, oh, you know, he got hit by a pitch today and had to leave the game early. But Edgar Carroll, Kyle Teal, Colson Montgomery on an absolute tear after, you know, going through a lot, being called a bust, being sent back to Arizona not that long ago. And now he looks like, you know, if he gets the amount of at bats required, you know, could be on rookie of the year, you know, boards. He could be in the conversation. I'm not saying he's going to get it, but could be in those conversations. What do you think about this youth movement? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been impressive, right? And I think when you know, look at the bat part of it, I mean, the arms have been just as good as well. I mean, you look at the bullpen, I mean, Vassell, what Shane Smith did in the first half and all that. And then you look at, you know, you've obviously have Mydroth, who has hit a little bit of a cooler, but then, you know, Vargas hit a home run today, as I mentioned, and he's starting to heat it up out of the break. You know, Colson's been just insane. I mean, Colson is doing things that we all kind of envisioned after the first 2 years with the team, in 21 and 22, but yeah, it's all starting to come back to him, and he looks like, you know, the true top 100 type of guy. And then, you know, you have other pieces in there as well that are really showing up. So it's been really fun to watch the catcher two end up. It's been fun to watch everything. I mean, it's just been a really good last 2 weeks, and you're starting to see the power come along for a lot of these guys. You know, Teal had a homer today. You know, Carroll, I don't know how he hit that one out. I didn't think it was going to go, but
Colson too, I had no idea. Coming off the bat, Colson just didn't look like he was going to go. I don't think anybody thought that was going to leave the park.
Yeah.
Especially the wind was kind of swirling and blowing in for the part of the game. You know, it's just pretty awesome stuff to watch all the way around. And it's been the top to bottom of the lineup. Everybody has been kind of contributing in one way or another. So when one guy has a game, like you said, you know, Mydroth has kind of chilled a little bit. I wouldn't say he's completely cold. He's still getting a hit here and there. It's not like he's going 0 for 5, 6, 7 games in a row. You know, he's getting on base. He's walking. you know, he's still playing solid defense, so he's still a big part of what's going on there. But yeah, when guys like have those cool off moments, there are guys up and down the order. It's not just the guys in the middle or at the top of the order. The bottom of the order is doing things that you don't typically see from this White Sox ball club.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
My audio cut out. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Oh, no, I was just saying that these are things that we're seeing things from top to bottom of the lineup happen when guys, if somebody cools off, somebody else in the lineup is picking them up, is basically what I was saying. And it doesn't matter if it's not just the top of the order, it's not just the guys in the middle of the order, the guys you expect to, you know, be bangers. Everybody's kind of doing their part pitching in. So fun to see.
Shout out Josh Rojas.
Yeah. Speaking of Josh Rojas, he's been swinging a little bit of a stick, but I know there's going to be a lot of people, you know, Lenin Sosa has been on a lot of people's minds lately for some boneheaded moves. Obviously the infield fly the other day where he decided he wanted to try to take third base on a pop up to second base that they let drop. You know, I get it. Dumb move. He does make a boneheaded move every now and again. The one thing what's that?
Today, the final out. Not good in the second. I mean,
yeah, you know what, though? I don't know if I blame him so much for that one. The runner was already going on that play. And I don't know, even if Sosa gets the second base, that Rojas gets that throw there in time to get that out. I think Rojas should have had the awareness to go right to first in the game. But that's just me. And I watched it live. Who knows? Yes, should Sosa have been there? Absolutely 100%. I just don't know that it would have made a difference. So, you know, it's semantics. But,
yeah.
You know, the other day I saw a lot of people bitching and moaning about him trying to take home from third base and running himself out on a weak grounder to the third baseman. But that's one of those things where if the contact play is on, he's just doing what he's told. Anything hit on the ground in the infield, he's being told to go. No matter how weak or how soft it is. Yes, as a professional baseball player, maybe you should be able to make that split-second judgment to, all right, I should maybe ignore that signal, ignore that play. But when that play's on, he was just doing what the coaching staff called for. Anything, if you're in the contact play, you're going on anything hit on the ground. Then you're going to try to force a throw. Unfortunately, it was not as difficult of a play as it could have been, and he was thrown out at home. But my thing about Sosa is, you know, there are a lot of players in the history of the game that can make boneheaded moves, but this guy's clutch when it comes to the bat. He has been one of their more solid hitters for the entire season, and I know that doesn't say a lot for this team the way they were, you know, offensively producing early on. But at the same time, to me, it says a lot because he was one of the people that when nobody else was performing, he was at least putting something out there. So, you know, I would take that any day. I am not ready to throw this guy under the bus. And you can call me biased. Yes, I've been saying I'm a fan of his for a long time, but I'm just trying to read between the lines here. The people that are ready to just dump on this guy over and over and over again, I'm just sorry, folks. Like, you could have said that about so many baseball players in the past. And, you know, whether it's a defensive gaffe or a base running gaffe here and there, what he's doing with the bat far outweighs any of those things, in my opinion. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jake?
Like, he's got 10 home runs this year, 41 driven in. Like, and he's a, you know, OPS plus of 99. Like, there's a bat there. I just, it's so hard to get extensive amounts of power out of the second base position. And I mean, he could be a 20 home run guy. And you're talking about that from second base. I mean, the issue the Sox are going to have, we talked about this a lot, especially the draft brought this up, is like they have a log jam in the middle infield. That's not a shock to anybody. You know, Mydroff gets hurt today. We'll see what happens with him. Hopefully he's all right. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the raw power is there, but he doesn't walk. I mean, he just straight up doesn't walk. It has been getting a little bit better, but I think it's also taken away from a little bit of him because he's being now too patient. and just watching pitches go by. But yeah, I mean, he's got nutty pop. Like, for a second baseman who's 5'11", like, there's a serious hit tool in there. Or sorry, not hit tool, but there's a serious power tool in there. I mean, he's hitting 274. If he can walk a little bit more, get that on base, you know, up to what, 320, 330. I think there's a lot to like about him. I mean, there is just not a lot of second basemen across the MLB that can put up these kind of numbers. So, yeah, I mean, the defense isn't great. I mean, that's been his issue. But it's not as bad as people think it is. Like, I think he's, you know, -1 or -2 DRS player, which the gaffes are really bad. I get it. But overall, just like constant defense, he's not horrible. It is going to be interesting to see what happens when everybody comes up. Because actually he's a 0 outs above average player, which means he's above average defensively. So who knows? I mean, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's been pretty impressive to see what he's been doing. You know, he's on a cold streak right now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people too eager to give up on him just because, you know, you kind of see, you know, I think some guys are just watching highlights and they just see, oh, another defensive gaffe by Lenin. You know, but the dude's also has 10 home runs on the year. I don't know. I think it's hard to get power out of that position, and he provides it.
Yeah, when I was in the Navy, there was an old saying, and it's probably been used other places too, but it was where I heard it the most. And we had a saying that one will take away 100 attaboys. And, you know, a lot of those things, if you're just doing what you're supposed to do, nobody really recognizes you for. So if you're league average or even slightly above league average, but, you know, you're not super flashy, like, people just don't seem to recognize that. But the minute you have a gaffe, that's what everybody remembers. And I think that's kind of the issue that Lenin Sosa is going through right now. But what he's doing with the bat is far more important to this White Sox club than a couple of base running gaffes or, you know, a kicked ball here and there. But again, the defense is not terrible. Everybody's making it out to be like he is the worst defender in baseball, and that he is not. So, you know, the numbers don't lie. The stats are there. You can go check them out. There's multiple sources for that. You want to go into FanGraphs. You want to go to BB Ref. I mean, there's just so many different ways to break it down. And like you said, as a 99 WRC plus, he's right about league average offensively as well. So, like, on this baseball team, it's more than just being average. You know what I mean? It's more helpful to this club than it is detrimental. So. Man, I'm sorry. Apparently, my screen is freezing up over here. I'm not seeing it on my end, but apparently I've been potatoing. I'm just glad that the audio is sticking around. Sorry about that. Good evening, David. Good to see you, as always. So, you know, the deadline's probably the big news of the day. What does it say? Are you going live
from your flip phone?
I don't know what it is. I'm wondering if it's just the weather over here. We definitely have some cloud cover incoming. We had the storms earlier. I really don't know what's going on. Everything has been streaming all fine today, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. So, you know, as far as like me being able to watch the game and everything else, I haven't had any issues. Let me close my phone up and see how that goes. But let's get into the deadline stuff. And as everybody knows, unless you've been living under a rock, but if you're a White Sox fan, you know, back. Austin, am I moving? Oh,
you're check moving it out.
As everybody knows, Austin Slater was traded to the Yankees today for the Yankees number 18 overall prospect in their farm system, a reliever. What's his name? Guile. I really don't know how to say it. I don't know how to pronounce it, but what do you think of that move, totally Jacob?
Yeah, I mean, it's a impressive get. I mean, to get a top 20 prospect, it's going to be a top 15 guy in the White Sox system. That's a pretty darn good move for a guy who wasn't playing a whole lot. yeah, I think everybody made fun of Getz for, you know, that being their number one trade target, but it makes sense. I mean, everybody's looking for a platoon bat in the trade deadline, and they move off of him and pick up a top 15 prospect. So I would say money well spent, you know, did his job, mashed left-handed pitching. That's what they needed to do. Unfortunately, they have three outfielders who mash left-handed pitching. So he's the one to go. There might be, you know, there's potential for more. We'll get into that later. But yeah, it's been a fun rumor base, but a good deal to start off the trade deadline.
Agreed. Really not a whole lot to talk about there, other than what you said. Obviously, just to get anything back for a guy who was only playing sporadically here and there throughout the season. But when he did, you know, he, like you said, he did damage the lefties. To be able to get that kind of return, pretty nice. You know, who knows? Maybe this guy can break the ball club at some point as a reliever. White Sox have no shortage of pitching. And as it's been said many times over and over, you can never have too much pitching. Pardon me. So, yeah, no complaints here. But having said that, I think we should get into, you know, what things might or might not look like here over the next 18, 20 hours or so. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to address this comment in the staff really quickly. David Racka, I hope I pronounced that right, says, the kids are awesome, but please give due respect to Will Venable's staff. I think we have been all season. I think we've been talking about the changes that this ball club has made, basically from top to bottom, from the front office down to the lowest levels of the minor leagues, and the addition of quite a bit more personnel, even if you're not hearing about some of these people in background roles. But yeah, especially what's been going on the south side with that coaching staff and what they've been able to put together and take a team that had no heart and kind of no effort and just had a, you know, a bad look to them the last couple of years. And I still think, even if the White Sox don't get to 60 wins this year, I still think Will Venable should be in coach of the year conversations.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, this has been the show that we've praised, you know, Will and definitely Chris. I mean, I've come out as a major Chris Getz supporter. Yeah, I mean, it's been impressive. I mean, it's not, I don't really care about the win loss this year. I truly don't. I mean, it's about getting the number one overall pick next year, or at least the best odds to get that, in my opinion. But just the culture, there it is, that has been exemplified the on the field. Yeah, that one. it's been impressive. You know, you're seeing guys run down the, you know, hard down the paths. You know, I think the platoon stuff's been fun. You know, guys are hitting in the right situations. You know, everybody wants to give them crap for Caro and Teal not playing together. I personally supported the decision. And those guys have now played back-to-back days, which I think makes sense now. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's also thought that, you know, there was a ton brought in on the analytical side. It wasn't just Will Venable, who is a, you know, a guy who's an analytical guy. But, you know, there was rumored to be over 45 analytical staff to be brought in this offseason. So, you know, it's a smarter ball club. They're playing good right now. Will deserves all the credit in the world. Chris as well. So excited about these two going forward for sure. Best manager since Ozzy.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll definitely go with that. I don't know if the bar is real high on that.
I was a Renteria guy, but other than that.
So, you know what? I was about Ricky's Boys Don't Quit. He was very good at getting the most out of players. My biggest knock on Rick Renteria was some of his very poor in-game decision-making skills. But as a guy who was able to connect with players and get the most out of those players while they were in the game, absolutely. I think he did the job that he was meant to do, to be the bridge to gap that rebuild into what was supposed to be the competitive years. I just think the White Sox gaffed once they, you know, let Ricky go and hired TLR. I think that was a I'm not going to get into it. I've said my piece on that 1,000 times over. I don't care if he's a Hall of Fame manager or not. But there was a cultural issue, and I kind of have it in me to blame it a lot on the coaching staff that was there at that time, and I'll just leave it at that. So, yeah, obviously it's come up in the chat. We might as well just go ahead and get into it. We've said it a few times now. Trade deadline ends in less than 24 hours. There has been a ton of talk the last few days about Luis Robert Jr. and the interest that he's garnering from a couple of teams. I think that 8-team prediction, there was eight teams that were in on him, is, you know, as little as a week ago. I think it's down to like 3, basically, realistically, right now at this point. And I'm not even sure if it's 3, to be honest with you. I think it's at best 2 that are truly in on him. So let's go ahead and get into that a little bit. And I'm actually going to start with you because I have a lot to say about this. And it's going to be partially devil's advocate and partially I'm going to spit some things that I don't think anybody's really talking about. I haven't seen it anywhere, and I've had some things, some thoughts that I want to get into. But I want to pick your brain. What do you think the chances are of a Luis Robert deal before the deadline tomorrow? Who do you think is the best suitor, and who do you think is going to offer us the most, and if they're all one and the same?
I would put the percentage at 15. I think if there's going to be a deal, it's going to be the Mets, and it's going to be for Vientos 1-for-1 would be my guess. I think the Mets are trying to talk, are currently under the value of Vientos, which is fine. I think Getz is very much on the, listen, we're competitive, or we're playing really good baseball right now. I think we can be a good team next year. If we don't have to move these guys, I don't think we're going to. And I think that's the right stance to have. He wants Vientos, which makes sense looking at the next year's team. They're going to need a third baseman. They're going to need another Miguel Vargas. Well, however that you figure that out, they're going to need someone to play first or third. And so, you know, I'm not big on Vientos, but
I honestly think he's a DH only.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
pretty bad in the field. Let's just say
I haven't looked into it very much. I mean, I know what he was last year. Like, I know the postseason run that he had last year.
He was hitting tanks left and right. He was a big part of their postseason run.
But I mean, he's regressed a lot this year. I don't want him. He would be. I'd rather keep Luis at this point. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. But I think that's what the only trade is going to come out to, unless the Mets put together a package. The issue with the Mets and the Phillies is they've already traded a ton for bullpen help. So we'll see. But I truly don't think he gets moved. I think Getz has got to be looking at this thinking, you know, we have a competitive team right now. I mean, we just took 2 or 3 from a top team in baseball. And should have taken 2 or 3 from the Cubs. So, I don't know. I think they're going to sit still on Luis. I think they're going to sit still on Talkman, which I know you're probably about to get into. I think they move relievers and Hauser, and that's about it. I think it's going to be a quieter deadline than most Sox fans want. But if I was Getz, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, you know, I think we predicted, about a month and a half ago now, our over-under was somewhere around 8. I think, on players moved for the White Sox at the deadline. I don't think we get anywhere close to that unless of a sudden there's a run on relievers, right? I honestly don't think that the amount of position players we originally thought were going to be traded. I think, you know, if Michael A. Taylor was going to go somewhere, I think that would have happened already. I think other teams are searching for – I mean, there's a handful of bigger names out there that teams are – kind of, you know, already rumored to be in on, or at least checking in on. Talkman could be a guy who still moves, you know, and like you said, we'll get into that a little bit, but I want to finish up with the Luis Robert stuff, and I've got quite a bit to say. So if I go on a rant here and I get to, you know, jabbering too much, go ahead and step on me, but I might as well just come out and say it. Luis Robert, I'm with you. I don't know if I put my percentage at like 15% that he moves. I'll say this. I won't even give it a percentage. I'm not saying, and I'm going to preface this by saying, I'm not saying don't trade him. What I am saying is it better be worth the value. And I'll get into this because I know a lot of fans out there are feeling like they need to just take what they can get for him so that they don't end up with nothing. And I think that train of thought is flawed. And I'll tell you why. I don't believe that his second half resurgence here since the All-Star break is coincidental. I think it's kind of multi-layered, as in, if you watch today's game, I feel like you would have seen that he is probably healthier than they have let on with this whole adductor thing that he had going on a month ago or so. I think he's healthier now than he has been since 2023. And just by watching today's game, it should show you that. By watching the last couple of games, he made an excellent play in the outfield. Was it yesterday or the day before? Diving catch. He's been taking extra bases as often as possible. He had two stolen base attempts today, which I believe he was safe on both of them. The first one would have been hard to overturn, but it looked like he kind of gave a little bit of a swim move to make it in there, and I think that's why the White Sox decided not to challenge that call. But I also, the other thing is, if you watch, he hit a grounder, a line shot to the third base later in the game today. It was one of those balls that was tough to handle, but it was handled quite nicely, and it was picked up and tossed. He was absolutely busting it down the line to first base and beat it out for an infield hit for his third hit of the game today. There is no doubt in my mind that he's healthier than he has been. I think him being sent down or being put on the 10-day, you know, a month ago or so, a little over a month ago, was probably more of a, we're just going to give you the additional rest you need to maybe get that thing fully healthy, because he'd already kind of started to come back before the All-Star break a little bit and heat up. So between his time off and then the All-Star.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Our break. I think he's really had the opportunity to kind of really heal. Now, am I saying that means he's not going to get hurt again this season? No. But I think what we're seeing from Luis is partially that. And here's the real kicker. The reason I say you cannot let him go for just whatever is because I think somebody got in his ear about the fact that you have a $20 million club option next year. If you get traded away, nobody in baseball is going to pick that up outside of the White Sox. The White Sox are the only team that is going to pay you $20 million a year if you do not get signed. So you don't think that somebody got in his ear recently and told him, like, hey, you want to make that money? You better go out and play and make the White Sox double guess. You mean to make them do a double take on wanting to trade you. And now that you've got this team playing around you, maybe you want to stick it out and see what happens. But the only way to get paid is to do whatever you can to stay here. And if other teams aren't willing to meet what Chris Gess's ask is for him, you just don't trade him. You don't trade him. The only way he gets paid, now here's the other thing. He's got another team option, another club option the following season, which again, a lot of people will say, oh, if he's playing for a contract this year, well, he can just regress. No, he can't, because if he wants to get paid again, really, really paid, he's not going to get $20 million a year on the open market right now, not for his history. And he's 27. He's going to be 28 Sunday, I believe it is, if I'm not mistaken. His 28th birthday is coming up, right?
Yeah, I want to say so.
Like, if you don't produce right now, your chances of getting a big contract anytime soon are slim to none. I believe that this guy has all the talent in the world. And Wolf says $20 million isn't huge salary. It used to be for a center fielder. It's not, but it is huge for a center fielder who has produced with Luis's numbers. You know, right now, I think that the highest paid center fielder in baseball is only like $26 million AAV, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Is it?
Go ahead.
I believe it's Belly.
Yeah, I want to say you're right. I mean, so, PCA is probably going to reset that.
I mean, that's possible. I
honestly don't know who it is. But, like,
but right
Belly's
now,
Belly's not even a center fielder anymore.
Yeah, no. Well, that's true. I can't remember. I think the highest paid center fielder in baseball is $26 million this year.
It's Belly with 26 mil, and then Springer at 20. But Springer's also not.
Right.
You want to know who it is? Oh, take a guess. I'll give you a hint. He plays in the NL West.
The NL West. Oh, my God. Why am I drawing a blank? Guy who hasn't been playing up to par at this point, right?
No. I'll put it out there. Young Ho Lee, that's the highest paid center fielder in baseball.
And what's his
international contract? 18.8 mil. Julio's next at 17.4.
Right. So $20 million for a center fielder is actually big money. Big money. And for a guy who's produced the way Luis Robert has the last year and a half, huge money. So yeah. Nobody's giving him that. The thing is the White Sox have the payroll to play with. So if he doesn't get traded for what the White Sox think he's worth right now, re-signing him next year is not a big deal. Now, there's a third part to this as well. Everybody wants to say if the White Sox don't trade him and they keep him and he sucks the rest of the year, fine, whatever. You don't take his club option. You have to take his club option, honestly, if you don't trade him. Because if you don't, and the White Sox will pick up that club option if he's not traded this year, because then you have to hope again that he has at least a good first half so that you can trade him again next year. Otherwise, you have given him up for nothing. Now, here's the thing. Everybody wants to act like that $20 million is their money coming out of their pocket. What we're forgetting now is there is a new part of the ownership who, if you think he doesn't have any say in how the money is spent right now, if you think that for any reason Jerry Reinsdorf is going to shoot him down 100% without him having any say, if you think he took that spot on ownership without having any say, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a property juggernaut and a leader of some of the biggest hedge funds in the world. He's going to have some control over what's going on. He may be injecting some money into that payroll. I think you almost have to get into Luis Robert's head and say, you know what, your best chance of ever getting a big payday might be staying right here with the White Sox. And you got to be telling other teams that there's no way you're prying them away from us for garbage. You're not going to be like Mark Vientos. Sure. He's a home run hitter. He did things last year that he's not doing this year, but he doesn't have a position on the field. So I don't feel like that's a fair trade. Like Luis Aniel Acuña, he is definitely not his brother.
Yeah.
And we're going to throw it out there right now, or his cousin, or whoever the hell it is. His brother, right?
Yeah, they're really brother. That's his brother.
So, like, yeah, no. And then the other couple of names that you're getting thrown out there, I don't think the Mets are even willing to part with. So, if Philly was in as much as he said they were, I don't believe they let them play him today in the closeout game less than 24 hours away from the trade deadline. Are you going to, if you're really in on Luis Robert Jr. and you're closing out the third and final game of a series in which you've already split the first two games with the White Sox, are you, and it's cold and rainy at a 3.5 hour rain delay, 3.5+ hour rain delay, do you really let Luis Robert Jr. play against you if you're pushing to get him? I don't know. Dombrowski's done some crazy things in the past, and he's one of those guys who will shell out money and give away, prospects to get what he wants. But I don't know. It's just me. Do you have any thoughts on any of the things that I've said about Luis Robert and why I think there's a really good chance he doesn't get traded?
I do. Quickly, old friend alert, as the chat mentions, Soroka to the Cubs.
Yes, indeed.
Shout out. Dude's got a 4.87 ERA this year. So, anyway, no, I do have a lot of thoughts. For one, Luis Robert Jr. has been extremely good. Since coming back off the IL, last 15 games, he got an OPS of 990. That's pretty swell. But even before that, like his last 30 games, he has an OPS of 878. That would rank you second currently in majors for center fielders in OPS. Buxton's one, and then you'd be beating out PCA, who's in second with 868. What I'm saying is there's a lot of thought of, like, you know, oh, he's not playing well, but, like, I think some baseball fans realize that, like, it's not a really good offensive position in baseball. Like, center field is a notoriously bad position offensively right now. I mean, it's kind of like second base. And, like, dude, like, Andy Páez is fourth. Trent Grissom is third in OPS for, like, the position. I don't know. And the other issue the Sox have is, like, there's nobody to call up. They don't have any outfielders in their system. Braden's going to get called up next year, but he's not a center fielder. Like, straight up, he's a corner guy. And there's not one in the system at all. Like, they don't have outfielders. Like, Drew Baker is your best outfield prospect other than, like, Wolko, who, like, again, corner guy. I don't know. I think if you add a DH this year, like a true 40 home run guy, like we've talked about, like they could
a Schwarber. If you could,
right? If you add Schwarber
in the offseason, you go out and you get a first baseman.
I think they're closer than everybody realizes, which I know, you know, White Sox Twitter is going to hate because, you know, everybody's a downer on there, but like they're close, like not to being a World Series contender, but. Like, they, in this division, like, they could be second in the AL Central next year, and I wouldn't be shocked at all. No. Especially if they have the offseason.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, I just don't think there's a need to move a lot of these guys. I think that you're only moving guys who are expiring at the end of the year. Hauser's gone. Any reliever on a one-year deal. That's really all I think that's going to get traded. Maybe Michael A. Taylor. Like you said, I think if the deal was there, he would have been gone already. That's my overall thought on the deadline. I mean, like, I think with this last 2 week stretch, which you don't want to buy in too much, but there's not many outfielders, especially center fielders, who can play Gold Glove defense and hit 40 home runs. There's not. There's maybe two others in Buxton who can't stay healthy and PCA. And you've got one and you don't have something in the system to replace them. I don't see them moving.
Yeah, and the thing is you're probably not getting anything back for him.
Right.
That profiles as a player that is truly a part of the future of this team. It's just the way it is, because if everybody's viewing him as a two-month rental, the only way I say this he works is if you giving him up for next to nothing for a Vientos, who's, again, a guy I feel like has no position on the field and is truly a DH type. Maybe you convert him to first base, but I do not believe he's a long-term third baseman. He's not good defensively. He's not. I'm sorry.
He's a negative seven outs above average this year. Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. He's terrible. He does not have a position on the field. So, like, you're going to trade away a guy. Again, I get it. He's been injured, and he hasn't played up to his hype and what we know should be his abilities as a physical freak, right? At least not with the bat. Defensively, he's been fantastic. He's taking extra bases when he's healthy. He's doing all the things that he's supposed to do when he's healthy. But, you know, health is always going to be a concern until he shows us that he can remain healthy. I get that. I 100% get that. But selling low on him just to sell, just to say you got something back, you are not going to get anywhere near what his ceiling could be if he stays healthy. And imagine if he goes to a team. The only way this works for a two-month rental to get through, to help a team get through the postseason, is if he lights it up for the rest of the season for them and maybe they re-sign him. But for the White Sox, for it to work for the White Sox, he'd have to do just enough to do his job for that 2 month rental. And then you hope that we bring him back in the offseason. Then it's a win because you got something, plus you get him back, and maybe he produces again for you in the offseason. But from Luis Robert's angle, the reason I brought up the contract is because he's not going to get that money anywhere else. So he's got to do everything he can to prove that he's worth that money. And the White Sox are the only team that's going to pay it.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is like there's a shot, right? If you can talk, I mean, I think he's a Boris guy that, like, Boris knows the market. Like, you could even have, like, you can negotiate a deal if you bring him back. It might not be 20 mil next year. Like, you can totally sign him to an extension and get around that 20 mil. But I agree. I mean, I think people need to realize that the Sox quite literally have Andrew Benintendi's contract in the books next year. That's it. That is the only contract, genuinely, that is the only contract on the books next year. Like, they have zero money committed to players next year. The there's like so much money
that outside they of ARB eligible trailers, they have $17 million on the books.
Yeah.
$17 million. Yeah. So, I mean, you pick up Luis Robert's option, it brings you up to $37 million.
Right.
I mean, what are we talking about here? And like I mentioned, we have a new piece of ownership who everybody's known and talked about for the last few months, who is thought to be injecting some finances into the club, whether it be towards a new stadium, whether it be towards player payroll. Nobody really knows. That hasn't been talked about yet. But I find it odd to think that it would be crazy to think that he doesn't have some say-so on what goes into the payroll or not, especially if he is hoping to be the majority shareholder in the next 4 years, 4 to 5 years, right? I mean, I just don't think that you can look at what him and his brother have done with the Phoenix Suns and say that they're not going to do something with this White Sox club. Now, whether or not the Phoenix Suns have been successful in what they've done, they have thrown some huge contracts out there. They've thrown a ton. They have injected so much money into that basketball team. You can't think that's not at least partially going to start almost immediately with the White Sox team. There's going to be something that happens. Mark my words. These guys aren't just going to sit back and wait for 4, 5, 6 years for them to finally say, okay, now we have majority ownership. Now we can start doing something with it. To me, that would be ridiculous. You're going to start investing in the future of your investment, I should say. You're going to start injecting money into that investment as early as possible to try to get the returns as quickly as possible. You know, scared money doesn't make money. So it just is what it is. I got some stuff here in the chat I wanted to get to.
Quickly add on that.
Yeah, go ahead. No, please do.
No, I mean, like, I don't think people realize how rich the Ishbia brothers are. Like, they would be the second richest owners in sports, or not in sports, in baseball, behind Cohen of the Mets. Their baseball, like, Justin's a huge baseball guy. All right, Matt, I'll figure it out by 2029.
Justin's the baseball guy. Matt's the basketball.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There we go. I just find it hard to believe that like he's 5 years away, but if you start pushing money into the team now, like it's gonna be there for you. Also, it's not like he doesn't have stake in the team currently. Like he still is the biggest minority owner. Like he just bought up everybody else. He's got to be pushing over 30% ownership, if not into the 40s.
I don't think it's that high, but you don't think so? Still, I don't think so. But yeah, he's probably up there.
So yeah, I agree with you. I think they're going to push some money this offseason. No idea what it's going to be at, what they're going to get. But even if they don't, like even if you're just using Jerry's money, like.
Yeah, I think right.
Jerry would give enough money for you to bring him back.
Right there, like you said, you know, even if it's just Jerry's money without Ishbia, if we commit that $20 million, Luis Robert, it's $37 million on the book plus ARB numbers, which for most of these guys aren't going to be huge, right? So, like, payroll's still going to be at a fairly low minimum. You know what I mean? It's not, you're not even going to come close to eclipsing 100 million. Yeah, it might break 80, barely. That's including like maybe an off-season acquisition or two in there. But I don't really see them doing much in the off-season unless they are trying to be way more competitive, like we've talked about, and go out and sign a true first baseman and a true DH. You know, and maybe go after, you know, if something happens to come up, maybe you pick up another, you know, reliever or outfielder or something in there. But, you know, obviously this team is loaded with pitching. We've talked about it for weeks now. The amount of Tommy Johns and arm injuries that we've had throughout the system, you know, between the major league club and the minor leagues, there's going to be a ton of guys coming back on inning limits next year. So I could see a pitcher or two, three maybe being picked up, obviously. But I don't really expect any major splashes on that front. And we all know, like, there's just not a lot of bats in the system. So you're going to have to spend. I think that's part of the reason why they've kept payroll so low, is because they know they have to spend on bats at some point. And this is a decent off-season market for the bats, specifically at the positions of need that the White Sox have. So,
agree.
You know what? Why not? Why not? Just throwing it out there. So, I mean, and that's a lot to talk. That's a lot to say about Luis Robert Jr., but the main thing is I don't want to see them just throw it away for, you know, a Vientos or a Acuña Jr. Like, I just feel like that's even for a 2-month rental, it's trash.
Yeah.
It's trash. I'm sorry.
And the issue, too, is like, you have to find a guy with more potential than Luis Robert. I don't know if that guy exists. Like,
and I want to touch this. This is the one I pulled up a few minutes ago here. David Raca. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, dude. I promise I'm not trying to do that. And he's got the cool Tasmanian devil picture on his profile there. But he asks, I'm assuming he means James Fox, but why are Jay Fox and others so sure that the Sox do not pay $20 million for Roberts next year? Where else is better, even if he plays 50% of the season and we run books out there? And I'll say this, like, so James and Ian this week on the Future Sox podcast actually did talk a little bit about this. And James actually did say if they don't trade him, he does expect them to pick up the club option. The reason is you almost have to, because if you don't, then you look like complete idiots by letting him go for nothing. You have to, and you kind of see where it goes from there. Maybe they trade him again next offseason. Maybe he just comes out banging. Maybe he finishes the second half of the season the way he started the second half this year, and he looks like the old Luis Robert. Maybe he comes out and does the same thing for the first half next year, and the White Sox just decide, hey, you know what? This is the piece we've been looking for to build around. Let's go ahead and do that. Who knows? But as of right now, I just don't believe, unless it's a knock him over, bowl you over kind of offer, you know, and this is what James said. Like, you know, if they come up with the right offer, absolutely, go ahead and trade him. I think Ozzy pretty much said the same thing in the post game today. Like, you don't just trade this guy for nothing. If they give, he doesn't want to see the guy go away, just like a lot of us don't. And you can call us, you know, prospect huggers and wanting to hang on to players too long. It's not about that. It's about getting the best value. And giving away Luis Robert for 2 months for a garbage pickup is just, to me, it's worth it just to keep him. I think you're better off keeping him. $20 million is a drop in a bucket for the payroll right now. So, but yeah, I don't believe James actually said they don't want to pay him the $20 million. So, James, haven't seen him in a while. He asks, do you see Martin Perez back on an incentive laden contract?
Martin, they have an option.
They do.
It's a mutual option next year. So if they want to come back, which, I mean, Martin was pitching lights out, I wouldn't be surprised. The other issue they're going to have is they've a lot of starting pitchers.
Yeah, but they're also going to have, we've talked about this, they're going to have a lot of guys on pitch limits, innings limits next year.
Right.
So
I wouldn't be surprised to see him back.
I would not either. Yeah, it's shocking that Hauser hasn't gone yet. I still think there's a To be honest with you, I think he's still probably the number one guy, in my opinion, that gets dealt before the deadline goes. Again, I can see a chance of Tauchman going because there are still a few teams out there looking for a corner outfielder. Well, no, Tauchman's got 1 year left, so that also extends the value for him. And you know, he's got over 1,000 OPS still, or at least
848, I think.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I know his OPS off the top of my head, but I do.
Either way, for a corner outfielder, not bad. You're creeping up close to 900. Guy just does all the right things and apparently is a leader in the clubhouse. Again, you don't get rid of him unless you get the right kind of return. I think Michael Taylor is another guy that we can see go. We've talked about that a little bit. I don't expect huge return on him, but I would like to think that maybe you could get like one guy in the 10 to 15 range from somebody. Type return, yeah, maybe a little bit better than Slater, but not much. And then maybe a couple of relievers are still kind of out there dangling, but I don't see the 8 or 9 that we predicted just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no shot.
So,
no, I want to touch on Tauchman. Like, I think he's like a really good keep. If I had to bet a lot of money, I think like you're bringing him back.
Haven't had a right fielder in ages.
Right, I think it makes sense to move next year, right? If Braden's up at the deadline, because they just moved him aggressively to double A, like I think you kind of wait and see. Because the other issue you're going to have is if you don't bring him back, you have to find a right fielder for next year. Like you don't have, again, don't have outfielders in the system. Although maybe Will Robertson's something, I don't know. So I think Tauchman comes back. He's a clubhouse guy, as you mentioned. He's mashing in Chicago.
And the other thing is, I find
it rare that he leaves.
Everybody keeps talking about how he mashes lefties, but I don't know, for like the last month and a half or longer, he's actually been hitting right-handed pitching really well. So, I mean, especially since the break anyway, like and the whole team really has been hitting it. No matter what side of the, what side they're facing pitchers from, it's been really, really fun to watch this ball club kind of mature and start to attack pitches. And you kind of wonder, so I've had this thought over the last couple of weeks, and I've been waiting for maybe some sort of cool down, and it just hasn't happened yet, which, thank God, I'm happy for it because it's just so much more fun to watch. But you got to wonder as if, like, have they, now we've got new hitting coordinators in the system and analysts and everything else, and new tech and new analytics guys and all these things. You wonder, like, were they just working on their approach and contact rate a little bit? And then once they got to that point, was like, and during the break, Venable sat down and said, okay, we're doing all those things right. Now it's time to start mashing. And they just let them loose. Like, were they just like, hey, hold back until your swing is like where it's supposed to be. Like, let's just make sure we get these things right before we try to attack. And now it's like, okay, everybody's pretty much got those things right. Now I want you to go and attack. And they were like, cool. Because it sure feels like it. I don't really know. But whatever happened was like, I mean, it feels like they during that meeting they had coming out, that first Friday game after the All-Star break, and it was talked about, it was an emotional meeting, and, the team meeting was awesome, and Will Venable came in and said his things, and I just wonder if he was like, all right, dude, time to take these pitchers to Pound Town. And that's right. I said it. Take them to Pound Town.
There goes our monetization. Just kidding. I mean, apparently they were just like, hit the fastball. Like, that was the rumor, is that like Venable was just like, yeah, be more aggressive against fastball. And apparently that's all they needed because they just keep mashing. But like a good example of that is like Edgar Caro. Like, he has 4 barrels this like past week. He was barrelless before that. Like, he kind of seems like a guy where, like, and I liked this with the catcher tandem of, like, all right, get your base underneath you. You hit, Teal hits righties better. Edgar mashes lefties. Like, get your footing under you against pitching you know you can hit from the right side. And now that they're starting to figure it out, it's like, all right, now let's see what you really got, let's play against everybody. And Caro, I think, is being unleashed a little. I think he was being a little too safe, which is fine. I mean, as a young player, I think, you know, you want to just see as many pitches as possible, and that's what he was doing. But now it seems like, all right, now go hit. Because Edgar's got pop. Like, there's legit pop in that bat. And now he has 3 home runs on the season. 2 of those coming this past week.
Yeah, I could have said it better. Honestly, I'm not going to try to break it down too much. It's been fun. I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. I hope it continues. I can't honestly see them continue to put up, you know, close to 9 runs a game for the rest of the season. But, you know, I think I put a tweet out last Saturday or Sunday. I think it was at Saturday night's game. Where the Sox had the best 7 game run average for the season at that point, surpassing none other than the Cubs. It was during the Cubs series that I put that out there. But yeah, I mean, they were averaging something like 8.68 runs a game or something in during that 7 game span. And, you know, that's insane. That's insane. Yeah. Numbers. That's a ridiculously high. I don't know if that continues, but then again, you go up against teams like Philly, and you're not facing bum pitchers.
They have the best pitching staff in the league.
Right. You faced Shota Imagana and chased him early in the game, beat him up. Or Imanaga. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. I caught myself. I was like, wait a minute, that didn't sound right. But yeah, I mean, you're like, when we were doing this against the Pirates, I was like, okay, it's the Pirates.
Yeah.
You know? And we didn't get to see Skeens. You know what I mean? So it was like, all right. But then they just continue to do this. And they're doing it against great pitching. And they're getting into bullpens early. They're chasing some aces. You know, it's ones and twos on staffs. I don't know, man. It's just fun to watch. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to look gift horse in the mouth. And I hope it continues.
Yeah, it's been a heck of a ride. I will say they did luckily avoid Wheeler, who's probably the Phillies' best, but yeah, I mean, it's been fun. And shout out the pitching staff. I mean, pitching wise, they've been really good. Like they're putting out some performances. Today, Tyler Alexander, who's been a random find.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Vassell, like, dude, they've got some pitchers.
Yeah, man. Vassell goes really like, solid. Didn't he go over 4 innings today?
Yeah. 4 1/3.
I
think. Either 4 even or yeah, 4 and a, yeah, something.
Like, I mean, I, you know, it's just, it is what it is, man. So we're at the almost 1:10 mark. You know, time flies when you're having fun. We appreciate everybody in the chat. So, you guys, as long as you're hanging out, I'm gonna throw it out there now. We're gonna do some hot takes and heaters of our own, but give you guys a couple of seconds to come up with some hot takes and heaters in the chat. And if we see anything that that's worth discussing, we'll go ahead and jump in on that. But Jacob, do you have anything to add tonight before we get into hot takes and heaters? Anything you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Sorry, I was reading a tweet. Hot takes and heaters, man. Who do I want to shout out? Shout out to Colson Montgomery. That was such a basic answer. That's the one thing I didn't do research for, was hot takes and heaters. I know. I'm a failure. I'm sorry.
No.
No. I'll give a good hot take. Sox for the rest of the year finish over 500. From now to the end of the year, they finish over 500.
You got a prediction on record?
They finish with 69 wins.
Woo! Wow, that's ambitious. They just got
that's their, really ambitious. That's not going to happen. But you know what? Vibes are up. Vibes are up. Yeah, that's not going to happen. All right. A little more reasonable. They pass their. They tie their win total tomorrow.
Oh, or very good. Friday. From last year.
From last season. There you go.
Yeah. As Chuck said on the post game show today, they are one game away from their win total. They're one win away from their total from last season, which they did not get their 40th win until September 28th of last year. It is not even August yet. We're at 40, so awesome. James and Ian, if you guys did not catch their show earlier this week, I suggest that if you're listening to us this evening or later on this week in podcast form, go check that out. But one of the things they talked about during that was, you know, some of the predictions. And James thought that it's going to be a bit of a stretch to do, but could you imagine them getting to 63-99 and avoiding a 100 loss season? And I think it's tough, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. If they continue playing the way they have been lately, I could see that happening. But I'm going to say between 60 and 61 probably for me. But still, I mean, if they do that, there's a good chance that Venable's in the conversation for Coach of the Year with a 20-game win improvement from year over year.
That's nuts.
So, you know, it's I don't know. It's crazy, but that's my hot take. I think that Venable does have – and, you know, it was talked about in the preseason, but now it actually seems like there's a chance that it could be reality. So I'm going to go ahead and throw that one out there as my hot take. And then the Heat is just – I'm going to just give it to the team as a whole, man. Top to bottom, everybody is doing everything they're supposed to be doing. I don't want to single any one guy out. I said my piece on some of the folks, you know, kind of dumping on Lenine Sosa. Yeah, has he made some bonehead moves? Sure, but, I mean, his value is far beyond what those bonehead moves are doing. I've always been a fan. I'm going to continue to be a fan. Call me a fanboy, whatever it is. Miguel Vargas hitting bombs, Kyle Teal, Edgar Carroll, and Colson Montgomery all going yard today. Pitching staff just looks phenomenal. They're shutting down some great offensive opponents. My heater goes to the Chicago White Sox.
Shout out to Andrew Vaughn. That's my heater. That's my heater.
Yeah. Andrew well, Vaughn. I tweeted that as well earlier. Andre V in Milwaukee. Everybody keeps talking about, oh, my God, look what he's doing in Milwaukee. I don't care.
I don't care
what he's doing in Milwaukee.
He's not on my team. That's all I care about.
Since he left, his White Sox team looks fantastic. Yeah, right. Is that a coincidence?
I don't care what that man is doing.
Maybe. It might be a coincidence. But
he was never doing that with the Sox.
I mean, you know what? He was a bum with the Sox. Sorry. Maybe we're completely wrong about him. You know, maybe he's an awesome guy and an awesome baseball player. I don't know. But since he's left the White Sox, they are a different team altogether. So that's that. You know, I don't wish him any ill will, but
great
I'm not
dude,
mad
from what
he's
I've
not.
Heard.
I'm not mad that he's not here anymore.
Nope.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Did destroy the Cubs, so that's cool.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for checking in. As always, we really love our chatters that keep us on track and give us some things to talk about when maybe we need a little push in the right direction. We appreciate all you guys. When you see us or any of our other shows live, remember that Super Chats are live as well. If you like the content, go ahead and donate whatever it is you're comfortable. If you don't want to donate, you can help us out by smashing the like button. Destroy it. Annihilate it. Smash that like button. Hit the subscribe. Hit the bell to get all your noties. We really appreciate that. All that stuff helps us with the algos and everything else. So if you guys want to check out our written content, you can find that on www.futuresox.net. And then we also have some of our exclusive content for a subscription of $2 a month to our Patreon. Lots of good stuff there. We appreciate all you guys. You can find us here just about every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central. For my co-host, Jacob Thome at jthome21 on X, I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X. It's been awesome. We'll keep you posted. If anything crazy happens, we might do an emergency pod sometime tomorrow. Maybe not. I'm sure some of the other guys here at Future Sox might do as well. So stay tuned. Until next time, as always, go White Sox.